Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour. It is May 8th, 2014, and tonight I will be talking about geoengineering. I'm going to go into a lot of detail describing how this works. And so some of the history, some of the current events, and the reason I'm talking about this is because we are having weather manipulation deluxe occurring right now. And the timing of this is little Obama gave his speech the other day, along with an 800-page report regarding global climate change. And so right now there's really nothing going on in terms of climate change or climate activity or severe weather naturally. What we're seeing is all man-made, the man-manipulated storms. Anyway, I'll be talking about that. First, I want to announce that Monday night, that's May 5th, into the morning of May 6th, there was a tremendous event, and I really don't know what it was, but people could not sleep. This happens occasionally, but I noticed it with myself and other few people that I know personally. Then I went on a radio show with Maria Heller. It was the first time she interviewed me on her show. It's called the Maria Heller Show. And so the first thing she said was last night, or this morning, she said three people had called her and said, you know, I couldn't sleep last night at all. And so she found that interesting, if not phenomenal. And she couldn't sleep. And so I started kind of polling around, and nobody could sleep. That was the Monday night. So if you didn't sleep Monday night, you're in good company. But at any rate, I wanted to mention that. Also the fact that this past week, I was on two radio shows as guest where I had never been before. One was with Maria Heller, spelled M-E-R-I-A, and then Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R. Does a lot of controversial topics, a personal friend with David Icke, who I met back in the early 2000s at one of the UFO conferences, and we shared our tables, our talk. If you give a talk there, you also have a table in which you meet the public, sign books, etc. And so anyway, that was back then. I met David Icke. And she's good friends with him. Then another show I was just on for the first time, comes out of Denver with Randy Yarborough. And he has an interesting style and this interesting way of talking and emphasizing the fact that the masses are being manipulated. And so we talked about geoengineering and the physics of geoengineering, which I'll expand upon tonight. So, quickly, I want to mention my sales page. For years, people have been criticizing my sales page, and I do have to apologize. It was a big mess, but I got in there, and I reorganized it into a table, which is, if you have a good-sized computer screen, probably the table almost fits onto your computer screen, but it's three columns, and in column one, I have the water filtration systems. In column two, I have the new mini travel emergency sports water filtration mini system and storage system. It's something very new. I'll just mention that briefly in a minute. And then in column three, I have the pre-filter. And then I'm still working on getting the books in there, but you still have to scroll down to the bottom of the page to pick up the book section. But anyway, it's a huge advancement over what was there before. Just linear information, way too much information. It's good information, but when somebody's trying to buy something, it really can get in the way. So at any rate, if you want, take a second and go to my webpage. Scroll down a little bit until you hit one of the links to the secure web ordering page and jump over there and the subpage and just check it out, see what it looks like. I'm in the main homepage. I will be doing something like that also in the near future. doing an upgrade because it's way overdue. But here's the issue. I am so busy with things that I'm doing in the background that I really haven't had time to pay a lot of attention to my web page. And so at any rate, I've tried to hire people to do it before, and I'll tell you, every time I do, I run into some kind of unexpected, what you might call a problem. So at any rate, I've attempted it before, but it just hasn't happened. So what I'm going to try and do is do it myself. And that way I can continue to modify it and change it. So at any rate, watch for that. By the way, I have a 10% sale on selected items. These are the big items on my sales page, the water filters, systems, etc. So go look for some sales. And I want to mention specifically the new mini travel emergency sports filtration system. And it's little, but I've got two sizes. And now here's what happened. The stainless steel mini container that I had been selling for years and years and years, all of a sudden we sold out and there was a problem getting the stainless steel containers. Now, the little filter element was made for that. It's a little 5-inch filter element. It's actually only about 3 inches tall, just the filter itself. But it's a wonderful little filter. It has the new, what I call GF filtration. It has the fluoride, arsenic. It also takes out chloramines and Clorox and chlorophyll and not chlorophyll, but the fluoride, excuse me, that is put into city water. So this is a wonderful little filter element for travel, because when you go to cities or hotels or you travel or if you go to foreign countries, you have no idea what's in that water. Let me tell you, chemicals, pollution. I used one of these in a trip that I took just about a week ago. In only 3 uses of this filter element, just about a 3-day period, it was so filthy that I had to clean it. That's how much pollution is in the water in hotels. It's just absolutely horrible. And it's not just hotels. They get their water, of course, from city water. But what I'm telling you is this is a must. If you travel, and it's a compact little unit, and it comes, it's very interesting because with the old stainless steel one, you had to set it on a counter. You couldn't have it in the car working or whatever. With the new one, the lids clamp securely, and so when the filtration is going on, you could set it in your car. You could put it in the back seat of your car moving. We've even tested them riding horses in a saddlebag, and the water filters just fine. And so these are securely closed containers. So the top part where the filter element is and the water, when you pour the water in the filter, the top clamps on securely. And then the bottom container, which receives the water, also the top clamps on very securely. So and then you have 2 extra storage containers. We have it in a 1-liter size and a 2-liter size. The 2-liter size is kind of a rectangle shape, and the 1-liter size is a 1-liter kind. It's a round cylinder. And so these are designed for travel. They can fit. They can store one inside the other for travel in your suitcase. It's just an amazing system. And I'll tell you, with people going to Brazil this summer for the World Soccer Games, anybody that's traveling, I mean, this is just an absolute must. Besides, you get the storage containers with it. You can carry, in the 1-liter size, you have 3 containers of 1 liter. So you have 3 liters worth of water that you can carry with you once you filter it. In the 2-liter size, it's 6 liters, or about 1.5 gallons of clear water that you filtered. You clamp the top on and you can carry that water with you. It won't spill. It won't get into your whatever else you're carrying. And when you want to store these for travel, you just take it apart, stick the containers one inside the other, and there you go. You're off and traveling. It's an amazing, amazing new system and the filtration unit. I've had people tell me that, I got one from, and I won't mention other competitors' names, but I want to tell you something. This filter element, there is nothing like it on the market. If you bought one or if you got one from someplace, ask them if it takes out chloride and chloramines and fluoride. And they'll, if they're honest, they're going to tell you no, it doesn't. It filters out. All it does is filters out particles, particulate matter, maybe down to cysts, and maybe some bacteria if you're lucky. But beyond that, that filter that you're going to buy from another company does not filter out everything. And there are people out there who just plain lie about their water filtration systems. But this is the only one that's going to take out all those chemicals they put in the water, in city water. Okay, enough of that. But go to the webpage. And I want to mention something about the price of clean water. I talk to people about this all the time. And people go, well, gee, it's $300 for a water filter in these filter elements. And the filter elements now take out the fluorine, the fluoride, and the chloramines and everything. It's going to be, for the mini travel, it's going to be about $100. For the full-size stainless steel home unit, for in your home, it's going to be about $300, but you can also buy a smaller unit made out of, it's a little bit larger unit made out of plastic that's only $100. So there's something there for everybody, and all of these are high quality. The other issue, the pre-filter, that's something that we're stocked up on again. We just got slammed in April with pre-filter sales, and people are waking up to the fact that they need to pre-filter their water because there's so much residue in water today that, or if you're on a well system, pre-filtering your water gets most of that crud out of there before it goes into your nice clean gravity feed water filter, and it fits any of the water filters that have been sold over the last 10 years. Okay, enough of that. But I'm very happy with this new travel water filter. It's really, really a good unit. And if you don't already have a travel unit, I would highly recommend that you go take a look at this. Okay, tomorrow, Friday, May 9th, Monsanto, there is a nationwide effort to dump. It's called Dump Monsanto, and you can look at that's all over the internet. They are going to stage rallies and pickets and demonstrations in front of anything related to Monsanto, including like Fidelity Investments, who is heavily diversified in Monsanto. Now, I want to make a statement here which is probably going to shock you. You're going to go, the whole idea of this dump Monsanto is to dump stock of Monsanto. Hurt them in the pocketbook where it really counts. And most people don't understand this. Most people are going to say, well, I don't have any stock in Monsanto. I bet you $100 you do. If you have an insurance policy, whether it's a health insurance policy, life insurance, car insurance, any kind of insurance policy for an apartment, whatever it is, that insurance company, 99 times out of 100, has heavily invested in Monsanto. And therefore, you have an investment, your personal investment in Monsanto. If you have a retirement account, a pension account, a 401k, you are invested in Monsanto. If you, especially like big companies like Fidelity, are heavily invested in Monsanto. So the effort tomorrow is to dump Monsanto stock and let those investors like 401ks and pension funds, etc., let them know that you do not want your money invested in Monsanto or any other company that has genetically modified food or Frankenstein food companies or whatever you want to call it. So that's tomorrow. So if you have a pension fund, 401k, I don't care what it is, your insurance company, call them up. Call up the main office and say, I know you have money invested in Monsanto, and I'm going to go with a company that is publicly declaring they will not invest in Monsanto and follows through with it. So at any rate, most of you out there, whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, are invested in Monsanto. And so the only way to get these people down, there are countries that have banned Monsanto and any, not just the company Monsanto, but anything to do with GMO food. The Big Island of Hawaii has pronounced a ban on anything GMO. They want to protect a place that, imagine that, a place that's as pristine as Hawaii. When you come to Hawaii, if you have an apple in your handbag, you have to declare it and basically throw it out, and they destroy that because they, you know, it's an island, and they don't want little critters coming across with everybody's, you know, especially regarding fruit, vegetables, or that would wipe out an industry there overnight because it's so isolated. Other places like that, California, you know. And so at any rate, the whole issue of there are countries. Poland, a year and a half ago, plowed under all the GMO corn over there and pronounced that no more GMO in Poland. Mexico had a big fight over Monsanto trying to muscle their way in and try and eliminate the natural corn strains from Mexico. Good grief. That's where corn started. That was the Aztecs that originally back in the early days and going far back, probably into the Maya, into the early days of the pre-Columbian civilizations that lived there. That's what corn came from. And Monsanto has the gall to go down there and try and force out the naturally occurring corn seed, which they have about 104 varieties, I understand, and install Monsanto Frankencorn. So, wow. You know, and these people are bullies. I'll tell you something. I'm going to be talking about geoengineering, but before I stop, I'm going to make a statement here, and I think I'm right. I think I'm right, and I can't prove it right now, but I'm starting to believe that Monsanto is behind a lot of the chem spraying, because I found out a little fact. They are developing an aluminum-tolerant corn strain and other plant strains, and a lot of the geo-spraying, the geo-climate spraying that's going on, contains aluminum, which will kill other strains of plants. They just won't grow properly. So they're trying to prevent anybody, any place, from growing crops other than their own specific genetically modified products or seed strains. And so I am starting to believe heavily that Monsanto, in fact, let's look at what I talked about a number of weeks ago, the banana crop failure along, it's in Africa, it's in Latin America, and it's growing because of the bacteria, the fungus that's growing on the banana plants, potentially wiping it out. And it's in its early stages in Latin America, where we get most of our bananas here in the United States from Latin America. But the point is that just imagine how easy it would be for a couple jetliners filled with big tanks and spraying that bacteria or fungus or cells or whatever it is over the banana fields of Central and Latin America to start the and destroy the banana crop. And gee, guess who comes in to save the day? Monsanto with their wonderful new resistant form of bananas. You know, these people don't have any conscience at all. And I am starting to think that a lot of the chemical spraying that is going on at the hand of Monsanto. Now, it might be that the government is footing the bill for all of this, and Monsanto is behind the scene pulling the strings and getting all this done for free at your expense, let's put it that way. Free to them, your expense. And then you're going to pay double because not only are you paying for the spraying, but you're also paying for the food products that are going to have to be planted to, because they're the only plants that would be able to be grown in the future, and that's the plan. These people are criminal. I've seen them at work. I've seen them on the, I did a study a number of years ago when I was selling the corn seed, the 1930s variety dent corn seed, non-GMO, non-hybrid, no chemicals, no or completely organic, open pollinated. I was selling those seeds, and very interesting, they would not allow them into Australia and certain other places. And so the issue is that Monsanto was already there with a presence in the government and in customs to prevent any competing seeds from even entering into the country. So at any rate, my point is, getting back to the chem spraying, I am going on the record as saying that I personally suspect that Monsanto and their government cronies are responsible, at least in part, for some of the spraying, that the chemtrail spraying that's going on. And I'm not saying that's the only issue, because obviously weather control is a big part of it also. And so the effort is going to try and sort this out. But remember, a lot of these companies are large international corporations which span international borders. They are not accountable to any federal government, and probably on the back page of some bill someplace, it allows them to do this. They've already got their ducks in a row to allow this to happen. And it's all supposedly legal because your bright and sold-out congressmen are signing away all of your rights and not protecting you, but protecting the big corporations that fill the lobbying halls of Congress. Before I go into the main science topic, I just want to reiterate, I've talked about this on shows before, the difficulty in finding real food in the United States. A study just came out. It said that 80% of all food that you buy today anywhere in the grocery store or whatever has sugar added, and many times it's in the form of high fructose corn syrup and in other forms. High fructose corn syrup is in one out of every four products that you buy at the grocery store. I don't care if it's meat or something in a box or in a crackers, cookies, I don't care what it is. It's got high fructose corn syrup in it, and it comes under many names. But this is really damaging the American public. There's a vast increase in type 2 diabetes. This is the young adult onset type of diabetes, that's what they used to call it. But the diabetes, the increase in obesity amongst children, and also the lack of mental processing. The sugar is an addictive chemical, much more addictive than cocaine. Now, would you put 2 or 3 teaspoons of cocaine in your pop and drink it? Or in a tea and drink it? Well, not that I know too many people who would. But, in fact, I don't know anybody that would. But that's what they're doing with sugar. There's something like 17 teaspoons of sugar in an average can of soda pop. I couldn't even eat 17 teaspoons of sugar and just, you know, take it on a bag of sugar. I couldn't even do 2 or 3 of them. But people do it all the time, and kids drink this stuff, or they drink some sugar substitute that's probably worse. So at any rate, finding good food for the people out there that have a brain and want to take care of their bodies, you have to find reasonably priced good food, and it's getting harder and harder to find. Even the organic. You go to the store and you go, I'm buying organic. It's GMO food. This is laboratory Frankenstein seed food. It's grown from seeds that are created in a laboratory. And a lot of it, the corn, the other vegetables, they actually take out a lot of the food value. And it looks like a wonderful cucumber or whatever it is, but I have been, okay, this is something I forgot to mention, and I'm going to mention it on this show. Over the past, let's say, starting around November. No, let me go back even farther than that. But I started, and I was able to procure all the food I needed. It was non-hybrid, non-GMO, truly organic because I knew it was organic. And the food, I did not drink or eat any food that was pasteurized. So I had no pasteurized milk or cream or ice cream or butter, anything like that. Everything in the dairy line that I had was unpasteurized. I never got sick once, never had any problems. The eggs that I ate were farm-raised, field-raised chickens with no chemicals, and so I made an effort. The water I drank was pure water that came from a mountain spring and then filtered through one of my water filters, one of my name brand water filtration systems. And so everything I ate and drank and consumed was pure, of the original something that you would have found 100 years ago. My hair started growing out. I had been rather thin upstairs there on the top of my head for many, many years. My hair started to grow out. I wasn't using any products or anything on my hair. And my hair starts growing out. All of a sudden, my weight, my metabolism, all of this becomes very much under control. I'm very healthy, and I'm not exactly a spring chicken. I graduated from college in 1970, so you can do the math. And I'm in the best shape of my probably any time in my life. I do exercises. I follow a regular exercise program. To say the least, my mind is extremely active and constantly working on my own projects, on other things going on in the background, maintaining my radio show, interviews with other people. And I was away from any chemical spraying of any kind, like chemtrails. So I was completely free of all of this. And now I want to tell you, this is the point of all of this. When you go back, and I went and I said, okay, now I'm going to try and sample some food from the grocery store, some this and that, that I know it's genetically modified food, whether it's corn or whether it's whatever it is. And I noticed it had a kind of a metallic taste to it. A very strange metallic taste. In fact, a lot of the food had no flavor at all. And so that's why they have to put sugar and salt and other spices in food to give you the impression that there's flavor there. So something activates in your taste glands and taste buds, they're called, to have the sensation of taste. Because when you eat real food, it has a very subtle taste. I don't care if it's what kind of food it is. Each particular food type has a very subtle taste. And if it's truly raised, you don't need vitamins, you don't need minerals, you don't need extra supplements. If you, for example, a lot of people are taking probiotics pills today. Well, if you're eating naturally made yogurt from unpasteurized milk, you are getting all the probiotics you need. In fact, I met a guy who had cancer on his head, on the side of his forehead. And it was there for a very long time. They heard about kefir. It's K-A-F-I-R. I think that's K-A-F-I-R. It's a type of bacteria. It's like yogurt, but it's another bacteria that makes a yogurt-like food out of milk. And if you do that with either raw goat's milk or with cow's milk, unpasteurized, of course, then what happened is he had gone to a dermatologist, and the dermatologist said, well, that's just a mark, don't worry about it. It turned out it was malignant cancer that was misdiagnosed, that was actually cancer. But after he started eating the kefir, I think that's how you pronounce it, kefir or something like that, yogurt from unpasteurized milk, it started to dry up and eventually fell off in a piece, like a scab. The tumor that was on his forehead literally went away. Now, why do you think this, everything, the big push towards pasteurization? Well, because it basically kills all the enzymes and anything decent in the milk. And this scare about, oh, it's going to make you sick, etc., is all complete baloney. Starting a long time ago, they were already identifying things that would make people healthy, destroy the large pharmaceutical businesses, and everything that's out there now is going to make you sick or unhealthy on a long-term basis. They don't want to kill people because you're a profit center. If you're living and sick, you're going to be in the medical system. And so now we have Obamacare, and guess who pays? So this money gets direct driven right into the big pharmaceutical companies, the AMA, and make no mistake about it, cancer is the biggest industry. It's one of the biggest industries in the world, and I did a report many weeks ago where they came out with a report saying that cancer would be grow by, I forget how many times, 5 times within the next 10 years. And, so the cancer rate they're expecting to soar. And I mentioned that the AMA and the pharma businesses are just squealy pig happy about this, because now, wouldn't it make sense, I mean business sense, not sense to anybody rational, but wouldn't it make business sense that if you had a product that was only allowed to be used for a diagnosis of cancer or some disease, and you had the corner on that market, wouldn't it be the next good business sense, good business, not moral or anything else, to create a pattern in which the people are slowly going to become sick and require your drugs or services that are mandated? And nobody else can offer anything else. And you sure wouldn't want something coming along like a little seed that if you ate it a couple times a day, you would no longer get sick. Or how about giving people real food? The organic industry has stated that if we went back to organic, we could actually raise all of the food that we need organic in non-hybrid with the original type of seeds, but we'd have to do it on smaller family farms. You know, if you look at Kansas, Nebraska, Indiana, Illinois, and you see those vast, vast fields of corn, soybeans, or whatever is out there, those are all corporate farms, boys and girls. The mom and pop 160-acre farm is a thing of the past. 25 years ago, 40% of the country lived on farms. Today, 2%, and most of those people don't farm. They just live out in the country. So, where does that tell you things have gone? We have gotten into a state in this country which could be reversed, but the political scenario is just not going to let it. How many people could afford to go out and buy a 160-acre farm, buy all the equipment, and start farming from scratch? It's an irreversible process, and we're stuck in this mess, the United States. So at any rate, I'm going to get into geoengineering now, but remember that geoengineering is coupled hand in hand with organizations like Monsanto or crops or big agribusinesses. These go hand in hand because they have to, the entire issue of control of these businesses to have complete control. And you have to understand something too. Let's go back to my corn sale, the seed sale of many years ago. Started in the spring of 2008. A group of 250 corn seeds. That's enough to create a very healthy stock of corn. You couldn't have less than 250 seeds because genetically long term that seed would not reproduce long term. So you have to have at least 250 seeds. That's why that was the minimum order that anybody could afford. And those went all over the place, and I had many, many, many success stories where people were growing that and saved their seeds for the next year. And my instructions, I told people how to save the corn seeds. But imagine this. The fear of Monsanto is that one person sitting out there with only 250 of those seeds would have the potential to regenerate that corn for all posterity, for eternity, and for the whole world. So they, when they're militant down to the last seed, you have to understand why. Because they know that with even a minimal number of seeds, a packet of 250 seeds, now if you buy seeds from an heirloom company, many times you cannot get 250 seeds of a certain type. They have a little envelope with maybe 20 seeds in it, and that's enough for the average person's garden. But if you're cross-pollinating and you want to regenerate your own seeds, you need at least, this is not just for corn, this is for any type of crop, you're going to need a few hundred of those plants to be cross-pollinating continually to get the strength in the strain. It's like inbreeding. If you have too small a population, you get inbreeding, and it doesn't work. This is what's happened with GMO food. If they've taken out the crossbreeding in the plants and put it into a strain where every plant is exactly the same, because that seed isn't going to grow next year. It's not going to create a corn seed or a corn stalk, or is it a soybean or whatever it is, it's not going to create that plant the next year. You have to go back to them to buy seed. And that's the issue. And I just want to mention also, I did a study in third world countries recently, and Monsanto and the big companies, through their subsidiary companies, have forced hybrid seed into third world countries to the point where the people are no longer planting the traditional saved seeds of that country that have been grown for hundreds of years and supplied food to the local people. Also, many of these countries are driving the peasants, the people who have saved seeds and know how to work the land, they're driving them off their land. This is the last stand for a lot of these people. And so there are confrontations going on in many foreign countries where the local farmers are being confronted by goon squads and basically being beat up, kidnapped, and driven off their land. And it's just a matter of time until the governments, through their international trade agreements and through corporations like large international agri corporations, come in, drive those people off the land. If they're lucky, the lucky ones will remain as slave serfs, living in huts off to the side with their family and working and traveling around to these corporate farms for a living. And so that's where it's headed. In fact, that's where the United States is headed. The United States is very much a third world country today. It's not something of the future. It's something that's there today. Okay, Geoengineering 101. How does it work? And now this is a lot of people talk about chemtrails, etc. I used to do a lot of radio about 10 years ago, a lot of radio dealing with chemtrails and geoengineering, etc. Back in the mid-90s, I was working with a group of Russian scientists from Central Russia in a university, and they were atmospheric scientists. They were trying to understand the electrical conditions they were seeing in the atmosphere in Russia. And so when they got a hold of my work, they translated it into Russian. They were holding weekly meetings with their staff and trying to understand how my theoretical work explained weather and weather processes. They were the first ones to see tornadoes on the sun, and they realized that I was right about the fact that these were electrical and what drove these. Now, how could there possibly be tornadoes on the sun? NASA only recently has discovered these and talked about them, but the Russians knew about them long ago and knew from my work how they operate, what's the power source, what actually causes a tornado on the sun. And so anyway, one of the resulting conclusions that came out of examining my work was that the systems, the power systems that drove tornadoes, cyclonic storms, typhoons, hurricanes, that these were driven from electrical currents that come from the ionosphere. And so basically what happens, and I'll talk about where these electric fields come from in outer space, what happens in outer space to drive our ionospheric electric field. But basically, it's like a capacitor or battery with the ionosphere charged up. It could be electrons, which is common around the equator of the Earth, or it could be positive ions, which is more common at the high and low latitudes. These are the north and southerly moving jet streams. And in around the equatorial region, it's the electrons that move in the westerly direction. These are coupled in a magnetic field, and it's just one of the layers of magnetic field that we can actually measure on Earth. That's why when we have solar storms, you can actually take a magnet, like the kind the Boy Scouts use, a magnetic compass, and look at the needle changing directions. Just set it on a table, and as the storm proceeds, you can see that magnetic field in the compass changing. And this is due to the electrical, magnetic, geomagnetic field that surrounds Earth. There are many layers to it. And we always were taught in Boy Scouts or in scouting or wherever you learned about it using a compass that this was reading the magnetic field of the Earth and would tell you true north. Well, most of the time that's true, but during a severe geomagnetic storm, there are other conditions, magnetic field conditions, that couple with Earth's, and sometimes they completely reverse. South is north, and north is south. That's how strong the external magnetic fields can be, and how much they can influence our magnetic fields here on Earth. So at any rate, if you understood this principle that the storm systems were driven from the ionosphere, from electrical currents that pass through the ionosphere, through the atmosphere down to the storm cloud systems, and how these processes work, then the next step was that we discovered you can control these storms by using a laser. If you pass a laser down through the atmosphere, or up, you can do it from the ground up or from a satellite looking down, you could actually control and manipulate weather systems. And so, okay, that's good, all good. So the point was to use this to steer hurricanes away from land masses or to break up existing low pressure cells. Then that would take the still that energy would come down, but it wouldn't be in a concentrated area. Therefore, you'd get rid of the tornadoes in the overland hurricanes, which I termed himicanes. In the cyclonic storms like cyclones, you could spin them out to sea where they would dump their load of water and reduce their energies out to sea, and you would reduce the risk of damage to land. Unfortunately, and I suppose as one might surmise, when this information got into the hands of the U.S. military in the cycles operating that operation, they turned it into a weather weapon. Of course, what else would they do? That's what they do with everything. Everything is a weapon to them. And so the Russians went to the United Nations and said, these people over in the U.S. have this technology to do weather control. They had been running HAARP literally since the end of World War II. They were testing, they were playing around with the weather. And geoengineering, geospraying, as far as I can tell, went all the way back to the post-World War II days, where they could spray metals, what you now call nanoparticle metals, small metal particles in the air, and then when the radiation, when the radio waves hit this region, it would heat up, and you could see what effects occurred when you did these experiments. So they have been experimenting with this since the, going way back. But at any rate, there's an announcement that came out, something about the military wants to own the weather by 2025. But you see, that's a misstatement, because that means, oh, gee, they have to study it. They're not there yet. They don't know how to do it. And that's way out there in the future. No, they already know how to do it. They're already actively doing this. And if they admitted that they knew how to control the weather now, people would start to wake up to the fact that they are controlling the weather. The weather systems we're seeing now, today, from Minnesota to Texas, severe weather all the way through Iowa, going down all the way, all the states, all the way down to Texas, they are expecting severe weather. This is very strange. Let's look at Kansas and Nebraska. 4 days this past week with temperatures in excess of 100 degrees. This is early May. I mean, this is so absurd. They set records 4 days in a row. Today, it's snowing. gee, boys and girls, is somebody playing with the weather? It's also snowing in Wyoming and eastern Colorado. The plains of eastern Colorado are getting snow today, where it was like 100 degrees, you know, a day or two ago. Somebody's playing with the weather. The severe weather systems that went through the American South, the southern states, about this past week, about a week ago, where they had that tremendous flooding in Pensacola, all man-conditioned storm systems. These, you could see the laser satellites working on those storm fronts that would be just like a beam that they would scan across, and you could see those storm systems building and building on a front line, just like you took a pencil and drew it across the satellite map of the weather. So this is all going on. So it's a combination of laser satellites, chemtrail spraying, and HARP. The HARP is the coin word for transmission of radio waves from big radio tower systems, and then reflects off the ionosphere and then is directed down into a field where the airlines have been spraying. And I want to mention also, I did a study, my own personal study. I went down into a region where there was a lot of heavy chemtrail spraying going on, and I discovered, number one, that a number of the big jets that I saw, these are the big four-engine jets, very clearly dropping off chemtrails, and the chemtrail came out of tubes that were on the wings between the two wing engines. So you have a four-engine plane, two jets on each wing, and between those jets, the jets had the contrails coming out the back, normal for a jet engine, but between those engines on the back side of the wing, there was a tube, and it was the chem spraying was coming out of there, very clearly a little pencil line. And so what I did is I checked the position and the vector, where that plane was headed, with the online tool that you can use to identify all the commercial flights in the United States, and it wasn't there. It was not there. These are not commercial flights. But I've also seen on commercial flights where they're also spraying. So they may have a path, and they might get, say, over the state of, say, Georgia on their way to Atlanta. Okay, that jet then has an assignment to start spraying when it gets over Georgia, western Georgia. Say it's on its way from Dallas to Atlanta. As it comes into western Georgia, it starts spraying. And so you have all of these commercial planes that have that ability. How do I know that? Because I have been on planes. I was on I think it was a 757 one time, and I can't remember where I was flying, But when the pilot landed the plane and he was greeting the people as they came off the airplane, and I said, "Very nice landing," and he was all smiles and to the pilot, "Thank you." And I said, "By the way, what are those little tubes coming out of the back of the wings?" And he, like, very happy with a smile, tells me, "Oh, that's in case we have to dump fuel in case of emergency landing." I mean, what a lying piece of you-know-what. This guy was lying to me. I knew he was lying, and he stood there happy like, "Well, I just fooled another one." No, those are the chemtrail tubes. They're on commercial jetliners. And yes, they do spray chemicals into the atmosphere, and the pilots know it. The pilots know it. Do you think that pilot is so stupid he doesn't know his own airplane? Those pilots know every square inch of those airplanes. Do you think he's so stupid that he thinks that's where the gas comes out, the jet fuel, when they're trying to take and make it an emergency landing? You couldn't fit all of the fuel that's on an airliner. You couldn't, in 2 days, you couldn't pump it out that stupid little tube. And so these guys, the pilots know it, and obviously they are under some kind of sequester ruling that keeps them shut up. And I was talking about this on John Moore's show Wednesday morning, and he said, yeah, a paycheck and a retirement pension is a big incentive for a guy to keep his mouth shut. And, of course, they're probably told that they're helping save the world or something like that, and the dumb idiots believe it. You know, the conditioning, you can get anybody to believe anything, and, of course, it makes it a lot easier if they're getting paid. So, at any rate, how does geoengineering work? The physics of it is relatively simple. What's difficult is keeping the public from knowing what's going on. So now let's look at weathermen. Weathermen are very poorly educated people. They are weather readers. They know all the terms. They can stand in front of a green screen and tell you and wave their hands, or a blue screen, I forget what color they're using now, but wave their hands and make it look like they're pointing to a weather system. I just saw a guy trying to explain away the Pensacola flooding, and he goes, "Oh, that Gulf air just came up, and it didn't go up into Mississippi. It got pushed off over here to Pensacola." No, that was a manipulated storm, dude. And the weathermen they're not intelligent. They cannot have intelligent weathermen, because one of them sooner or later would figure out, you know, this isn't the way weather works. And so they're weather readers. And guess who owns the weather service? Is the Rothschilds. Gee, isn't that interesting? But the point is, you couldn't have somebody there that had a brain. You only can allow weather readers, weather news readers, onto the television or into those positions. You can't have somebody that's educated and that would turn around and say, well, you know, these patterns don't follow anything in normal weather. You know, like last week, you have a storm system that sits over Iowa for 4 days. No weather system has ever done that in the history of the world, naturally. 4 days that weather system was pivoting around the state of Iowa, and as those storm systems moved through the American South, for 4 days it sat there. That's completely absurd, because the jet stream moves easterly, and it would have that wouldn't have happened. So at any rate, let me go through some of the other issues here. Recently, Obama, and this is extremely important, Obama gave a speech on weather, or the global climate change, and that's he said that this is a reality, which is really not true. It's a big lie, and there's an 800-page report that came out. This is all about control. This is the next stage in the government saying, it's just like Obamacare. The whole issue is to get people into the control system, and a lot of people, by the way, did not sign up for Obamacare. They cannot possibly say that was successful with 8 or 10 million people signing up. It was a grand failure. But why was it a success for them? Because they have 8 to 10 million of them, people who did not have good health care before, and it's going to cost a fortune. When these people start hitting the clinics and the hospitals, it's going to cost an absolute fortune because they pay the minimum and they're going to take the most. And not that I'm saying that people should not have health insurance, but the entire point of Obamacare was not to bring health care to the people, but to bring health slavery to the people. Obama gave a speech in 2012 at the AIPAC Policy Conference in Washington, D.C., at the Washington Convention Center. And in it, when you look at the setting here, Obama is up giving his speech, and you look around. Now, if you have seen the movie The Hunger Games and the meetings that the elite have, where they are cheering and they're all happy, this is what I saw. I saw the Hunger Games personified in the audience that Obama was talking to at the AIPAC Policy Conference in 2012. We are literally at the point in the world where, the Hunger Games concept is right at our doorstep. It is right here, right now. And the entire scenario of seeing these people all nicely dressed, sitting around, all of them extremely wealthy because of their association with the government and big corporations that run the government, what you're seeing here is the transition of the super ruling elite, and you get down to the level, there's really not much, if any, of a middle class anymore. And then the masses, the large group of people who are just trying to survive and being confronted financially every day of the week. But that's what I saw. And I see a country that is in very dire straits, but with no place to lash out to. The issue with Monsanto, that's nice, but you have to understand that this is all part of a much grander plan to subjugate the entire world into a large third world country with no middle second world countries and then a ruling elite. This goes up to the satanic worship that comes out of the Rothschild banking system of Europe, which is the front for the Vatican wealth. The wealth that came into the Vatican through the Middle Ages, that was taken over by the Jesuit interests that came out of Spain, who eventually took over the Catholic Church. And so for a lot of people who are religious, this is a very disturbing thing to try and digest. But until the common person wakes up and realizes what's really happening and who's controlling and who's manipulating, they're not going to understand why all of this is going on in our lives. But I'm out of time. Just remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Good evening. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.